This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up, new research finds that living a life full of wonder and awe can be really good for you. We'll talk to the author of a new book that studies those moments that give us goosebumps and take our breath away. Now, what is it about Wisconsin that makes it an appealing place to work and live? With the recent mass layoffs at some of the biggest technology companies, it's a question worth tackling. Amazon, Microsoft, Google have each announced plans to cut 10,000 jobs or more. And Facebook's parent company has already laid off 11,000 workers. On Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg warned more cuts could be coming. In Sunday's Wisconsin State Journal, our next guest writes that our state could be an ideal destination for technology workers looking for their next paycheck and a better life. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your best pitch to recruit workers to Wisconsin? What are your top reasons for living and working here? What would you say to someone thinking about moving to our state? And if you are in the field of technology, however loosely you want to define that, did you move to Wisconsin for a job? Did you pick Wisconsin over someplace else? Are you hiring people in these fields? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Tom Still is president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. Tom, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you, Rob. Great to be back.
Before we bring things home to Wisconsin, what's going on with these technology layoffs? Seems like during the pandemic, there were hiring sprees going on at a lot of the companies I just listed.
Yeah. I think in general, there was some overhiring for a variety of reasons. And that's a bit baked into the DNA for a lot of these tech companies. I mean, there have been ebbs and flows over time, if you look at it. But, you know, some of the overhiring was due to COVID. Some of the layoffs are, you know, there's pressure from investors. Some of the companies may be maturing themselves. You know, they're not the runaway startups they perhaps once were. Some negative cash flows in parts of those businesses. And, you know, some fear of a recession, although I do think, and then it depends on where you're at, it's going to be milder than not.
When people think of the technology industry, they may not put Wisconsin at the top of their list. They might think of us, of course, for the agriculture. They pay a little more attention to manufacturing. Talk about the technology sector in Wisconsin. How big a deal is it, Tom?
Well, it's increasingly a bigger deal, and we're thrilled to see that. I mean, there is for a lot of reasons. There are companies such as, let's take Epic, for example, that's health IT. That campus in Verona alone is now up to 12,500 employees, and they're always looking for people. There are other sectors that finance, insurance, other parts of healthcare, energy, advanced manufacturing. These are all sectors that, whether they truly call themselves tech companies or not, they basically are in today's world. So there's a lot going on there. And there's always, you know, this has always been a strong healthcare state, both in, you know, and devices and IT and research and therapeutics. So it's a state that is really, you know, found its footing in all kinds of tech sectors.
Let's bring out a caller at 800-642-1234. Michael is with us in Green Bay. Michael, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. After I graduated college, a lot of friends chased opportunities out on the coast to work in tech. And then with COVID and the opportunity to work from home, most of them, if not all that I can think of, immediately moved back into Wisconsin or the Midwest just due to how affordable it is and how wonderful the lifestyle is here and just the desire to be in their home state.
And Michael, I know some of these employers are saying, hey, you got to come back to the office all or part time. Is that happening to your circle of friends in that situation?
It's been hit or miss. A lot of them have offered, you know, we need you in for 1 week a month. And because these companies pay a pretty decent salary, a lot of my friends have also elected that, okay, on that 1 week, I will just travel if I have to be in, or the 2 days that I have to come in, I'll just travel for those days. And they've still elected to stay in their home in Wisconsin.
Michael, thanks a lot for sharing that. And Tom, that leads right into your piece now. One of the selling points you say and sort of a pitch to these technology workers is you can live a little cheaper, even if you're working remotely for those coastal companies.
Yeah, a little cheaper, a little better. In some cases, you might be in an environment that's more stable, weather-wise. We don't have tsunamis and and a variety of other things, and hurricanes in Wisconsin. But yeah, on the livability index sort of ratings, the things that I see, you know, say that the, you know, Wisconsin has some cities that rank really high that way. You know, we might begin to see some climate refugees. We might begin to see people who grew up in Wisconsin or the Midwest look to come home for a variety of reasons, and cost and convenience is, you know, a couple of reasons why. So it's it's an attractive place to live and work. Now, you know, I'm biased, but at the same time, there are reasons for people who, especially those who are laid off, and we're up to like 154,000 people who have been laid off in big tech alone. There's reasons for them to take a look here.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. He wrote a piece in the Wisconsin State Journal saying, basically laid off technology workers around the country. Maybe it's time to move to Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story to share about leaving the state and coming back to work here, if you want to make a case, a pitch for Wisconsin is a great place to live for people looking for work. If you are in technology fields, working or hiring there, love to hear from you too. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tom, we keep hearing about a tight labor market in so many fields, not just technology. What do things look like if I'm trying to hire somebody to code or program or run an advanced manufacturing program or whatever? What am I facing here in Wisconsin if I'm trying to hire those people?
Well, there are still a lot of openings. The State Department of Workforce Development, they run through their jobcenterofwisconsin.com site, an area where there are listings for about 100,000 jobs that are open right now. Now, that means that, you know, not all of them are going to be tech, obviously, but a lot of them would be tech or something that touches on tech. So there are openings here. Just today in one of our Tech Council Innovation Network luncheons, there was a company leader who was there, and he was talking about his company, which is a gaming company that hopes to go from 350 to 600 employees this year alone. I mentioned Epic continues to hire. There are a variety of examples around the state. So the atmosphere is good. Wisconsin employers added 60,000 jobs over the past year alone, which 2022, which says that there are opportunities, that the economy for those companies that are hiring is still good. So, you know, the opportunities are there.
You've written an op-ed in a state paper here, Tom. Do you think someone should be doing something to try to lure these workers here, whether that's the state or the business community or, I don't know, fill in the blank?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, and there are some folks who are doing so. You know, I think, for example, that the different institutions attached to the UW system or UW-Madison, the alumni groups, the foundation groups, I think they're constantly reaching out to remind people that, hey, come on home. This is, you know, a good place to be. And that makes sense. You know, if somebody already has familiarity with the state, they're going to be a little more likely to come back. You know, if you grew up in San Diego and that's all you ever knew, well, maybe you're not going to be thinking about Wisconsin. But if you're from someplace else in the Midwest, it makes sense. You know, we spent a lot of effort on tourism. We spent a lot of effort on dairy. You know, you can make a good case that, you know, spending this kind of effort on just job and workforce in general makes a lot of sense.
A lot of people might think of the Foxconn situation with a, you know, a big splash the state tried to make. Do you see opportunities maybe on smaller scales to bring in businesses, maybe not this, you know, this big thing that is a big roll of the dice, but lots of little efforts that could bring in businesses?
Yeah. You know, right now, some of the greatest opportunities out there may be tied to some of the federal legislation around energy, which was part of the Inflation Reduction Act, and semiconductors, which is really an effort to reshore some of the manufacturing around that. In both cases, whether it's energy, semiconductors, other tech-related things, automation, those are all Wisconsin's strengths when you get right down to it, because we're good at making stuff, and we'll continue to be good at making stuff. So those are sectors where I think you can make, sure, there might be some big plays out there. I'm sure the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation is always thinking about that. But at the same time, there are some medium-sized and even small plays. Again, the best thing is, of course, for young companies to start here and grow up and be bigger companies. So it's an across-the-board effort, I think.
Tom Still is with us, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. We're looking at recent big layoffs at some of the biggest technology companies out there, a lot of household names, the Amazons, Facebooks, Googles, and others of the world. And he makes the case that technology workers should consider Wisconsin for their next employment opportunity, their next home. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What's your best come to Wisconsin recruitment pitch? What parts of Wisconsin, what things about the state brought you here or keep you here? Do you work in a technology-related field? Is your workplace having trouble bringing people in? Do we need to pull people maybe from those coasts? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. He says technology workers around the country, some of whom are facing layoffs, should consider Wisconsin for their next home, as some big technology companies are laying off those workers. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What makes Wisconsin a good place, you think, to work and live? What would be the best selling point to try to bring workers in and maybe even bring employers in from outside of the state? What's your own story? Did you come here for a job? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Tom, I want to take a moment to ask about something else on your mind. We've got this Wisconsin Governor's Business Plan contest in the works now. On a related note, what's going on with that?
Well, we're coming up on the deadline for entry, which is January 31st, so about a week out. This is the 20th year that we've held that contest, and we're so thrilled to do so. And it's been really rewarding over time, not just for us, but for the companies that have taken part. It's really easy to enter, just govsbizplancontest.com, so G-O-V-S-B-I-Z contest.com. 250 words to enter. You know, the criteria are all laid out. The categories are laid out. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And other than the time to fill out the entry. And it's really a part, you know, earlier we were talking, Rob, about growing companies from bottom up. That's what this contest has been about over time. And we're pleased with it and looking forward to having another round.
And Tom, we talked not that long ago about the business scene, the technology scene in lots of communities, not just the two biggest communities of Dane and Milwaukee County. Are we seeing businesses and communities around the state mostly being homegrown? Are we seeing some people come in from the outside? What's the origin story of a lot of the, especially the startup activity you see?
Yeah, I mean, it is frankly a little bit of a mix of both, but I would say it's more on the startup side. You know, you mentioned communities. Sure, Madison, Milwaukee, great places, both of them. But then again, we're seeing a lot of activity in the Fox Valley in Northeast Wisconsin, Green Bay for a variety of reasons, especially the partnership between Microsoft and the Green Bay Packers and Titletown Tech has been a magnet. We're seeing it in the Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls area with more activity as that community continues to evolve. We're seeing Kenosha. That's a good example. Kenosha and its innovation neighborhood, which is kind of retooling that old Chrysler assembly plant in uptown Kenosha. Another good example of you know, how this is spreading out around the state. I think central Wisconsin is going to be the next hotspot for a lot of reasons, because the communities there, you know, whether it's Marshfield, Wisconsin Rapids, Wausau, Stevens Point, it's kind of a quadrangle of mid-sized cities that each have something interesting to offer. So I would say it's a little more on the side, you know, of companies growing up. Not that we don't have companies moving in from time to time. That's true too. And I think, by the way, one big advantage for them is the notion of the workforce and the work ethic in Wisconsin, as well as the training. But yeah, there's some good things happening around the state.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Gene is with us in Madison. Gene, hi.
Hi. I was just wondering if anybody knows the effect on people considering Wisconsin when they look at how gerrymandered our state is in the at the state level and the legislature, so that we basically get minority rule in topics such as legalization of marijuana and abortion access. And so that even though the majority of citizens want those choices, we don't get them because we have a Republican, you know, it's a minority rule situation in the gerrymandering that apparently
gotcha.
Is.
Gene, thanks for the call. Tom, it might be hard to tease out, but do we know things about how our state politics might influence decisions of people to move here or open a business here?
You know, in some cases, I think it's less about politics because, you know, I'm not sure that people in California or Boston or anywhere else are following it that well. But, there are some cultural things that come into play. And could come into play. And I think it's a double-edged sword. I mean, there may be some things that attract people from elsewhere about Wisconsin, may be some things that perhaps they hear about that they don't necessarily like. And some of it, you know, in some cases could be outmoded in terms of what they think. They could be thinking about Wisconsin of a different time. So, the political piece, I really can't speculate on that too much, but I think, you know, there are cultural things that come into play. I think young people want to live in a place that is vibrant and in keeping with their own values and interests.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Tom Stilt with the Wisconsin Technology Council. He wrote a piece in the State Journal looking at laid off technology workers around the country, making the case that, hey, they ought to move here to Wisconsin, looking at the opportunities in technology fields and businesses. Still time for you to call in with your thoughts or your questions for Tom at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Tom, somebody living in a Wisconsin community who doesn't work in these fields might wonder, so what? What's in it for me if we're bringing in these workers and these technology yeah. businesses into my town?
Yeah. It's an excellent question. Here's what's in it. Tech companies are like just about any other company in the sense that they have supply chains that extend, you know, pretty far beyond their own core. They buy things and from others in maybe unrelated businesses. And, you know, when I look at some of the companies in Madison, for example, that are pretty much in life sciences only, and what they buy, because at the end of the day, they are manufacturing companies as well, they extend around the state. And so those companies prefer to buy as close in as they can. So, you know, you could be in some service industry, an electrician or a plumber or, you know, all kinds of things where, whether it's taking care of existing buildings or building new buildings, a vibrant tech economy is going to really overlap into other sectors.
Tom, for that technology worker from out of state now that we're luring here, what do you think are some of the trade-offs, the balancing factors that they might compare and contrast that, you know, Wisconsin can make a better selling point to say, yeah, here's the place to be?
Well, I think it can, one of the selling points, and we touched on this briefly earlier, is that in many cases, not all, but in many cases, tech workers tend to be younger, you know, because they've grown up with this, right? And their skill set is, you know, really rested and vested in a lifetime of use. So what attracts them? I think it could be, you know, a sense of community. I can think it can be, you know, looking for things that are interesting in terms of entertainment. I think it can be the kinds of environments they look for You know, if you look at certain neighborhoods in Madison, Milwaukee, and other places, I think that's beginning to show itself. And yet they want to see solid, you know, downtowns and core cities, even if it's a small city. That's a part of it. I think they also, you know, they're young, but they might have kids. And they would be looking for, I think, solid school districts or educational opportunities for those kids. The public safety, you know, in some cases, where they're coming from may not be the safest. But Wisconsin probably looks a lot better in most cases there. And finally, transportation. You know, if you're in a place like the Bay Area, and your commutes are really long, you might look at Wisconsin and say, even if I'm on a bus, I'm getting there pretty quickly. So those are just some life factors, I think, that could play a part.
Tom, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Tom Still, president of the Wisconsin Technology Council. He joined us to make the case that recently laid off technology workers should consider Wisconsin as their next place to call home. By the way, he mentioned the Wisconsin Governor's Business Plan Contest. We've got a link. You can find that at WPR.org/Central Time. That's WPR.org/Central Time if you want to enter your own business plan into that. And if you've got your own story to share with us about maybe moving away from Wisconsin and back to work here again, love to hear it. Email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, WPR's Sean Johnson joins the show for a look at tonight's State of the State address, the Republican response, what it all means in a big year in Wisconsin state politics. That's tomorrow morning at 8:30 here on the Ideas Network. And of course, you can listen live to the big speech tonight here on Wisconsin Public Radio, or check it out at WPR.org. Governor Evers delivers the State of the State address, and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss will deliver the Republican response. That's coming up tonight at 8 here on the Ideas Network. And then tune in tomorrow on The Morning Show for a breakdown and join in with your reactions as well. That's all here on the Ideas Network. Just a couple weeks back, I mentioned that a cool comet was on the way, and I promised an update. Here it is. NPR reports that the bright green comet called C/2022 E3 is making its outbound journey and passing by Earth. At this point, it is possible to see it with telescopes or even binoculars. We'll get the best view in just over a week on February 1st and 2nd, maybe see it with the naked eye. Where should we look for it? Up, for starters. I'm not really good with my sky descriptions, but NASA says to watch for it in the morning sky heading toward the northwest. As with most sky stuff, your best bet is to get to a darker part of the state with fewer lights on at night. This might literally be our only chance to see this comet. Astronomers are still figuring out its trajectory. It's possible that it will be leaving the solar system forever. If not, the return trip would probably be thousands of years away. Comet news you can use. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, adopting kids can be complicated. Transracial adoptions can add additional challenges. How do parents and kids reckon with a process that's becoming increasingly common? That's today at 6 on 1A+. Now, when was the last time you saw something that took your breath away? A moment when you were captivated, shocked, and amazed by something exceptional? When you felt a sense of awe? Turns out these experiences can be really good for our well-being, an important part of how we navigate through life. And it doesn't take a trip around the world to find some awe in our own lives. In his new book, our guest shares years of research into the causes and benefits of awe, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What is a sight, a sound, an experience, maybe a memory that filled you at some point with wonder, with awe? What did it feel like to you? What questions do you have about why we have this sensation, this emotion? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Dr. Keltner is professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, director there of the Greater Good Science Center. His new book is called Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. He started his academic career at UW-Madison. Dacher, welcome to Central Time and welcome back to Wisconsin.
It's good to be with Packers and Badger fans out there, Rob. It really is. It's nice to be with you. Thanks.
Now, I think we all have a sense of what awe is, and some of us, like me, overword the use awesome. Can you define your working definition? What is awe?
Tough question, you know, and great thinkers have been grappling with this for thousands of years. And so to update it to contemporary times, we define, or I define awe as the emotion, as you said, Rob, in the introduction, that we feel in response to things that are vast and that transcend our understanding of the world or that are mysterious.
What led you to take this years-long interest in the sensation of awe?
Well, you know, part of it is personal. I grew up in a very awe-filled home in the late 60s. My mom taught literature and romanticism and Wordsworth and the like. My dad was a painter and loved Goya, and so I was just filled with the awe of the humanities. But I'm a scientist, and I, like Jane Goodall and Einstein and others, feel that in many ways this is the most essential human emotion, right? It is a fount of creativity and thinking about the future and the imagination and being part of a community. And so I wanted to study it scientifically and try to figure out what it does for us.
That seems like it's something that would be really hard to do. I don't know when I can predict awe is going to happen. It's probably not when I'm sitting in a lab with some researchers.
Yeah, and we failed a lot, you know, and we brought people into the lab, like, here's a big, you know, big screen image of fractals. And they're like, what is this guy doing, you know? So we relied on the wonders of the world, and we have studied people near Yosemite and looking out at great views, the Great Wall of China, you know, dancing, listening to music at festivals and the like. So we've gotten to awe spots, if you will, to try to understand what this emotion does for us.
And what I love about the research you've done also is that you've talked to people and interviewed people and gone on rafting trips and gone into prisons with people to try to figure out when they have awe. What are some of the common global themes that people talk about when it comes to sources of awe?
Yeah, you know, what a astute read of the book. Thank you. You know, I am a scientist and I rely on measurement and physiology, but I really felt like a lot of the measures didn't capture the spirit or essence of awe, this mysterious emotion. And so, like William James, a great American thinker, I started to gather stories. And I gathered stories from 26 countries around the world, from Mexico to India. I gathered stories from veterans and prisoners and indigenous scholars and ministers and the like. And what we found, and I think it's a great roadmap for our listeners to find more awe, is that you can find awe in eight wonders, which are people's moral beauty, their kindness and courage, nature, collective movement, when we all cheer for the Packers or the Badgers together, that's awe-inspiring. Music, visual design or art, and then spirituality. And then finally, our final two of the eight wonders are big ideas, right? Like the idea of free markets or Marxism or evolution. And then life and death, which really surprised us, that we are awestruck by the beginning of life and we are awestruck by when it ends.
Talking to Dacher Keltner about his new book, Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. You can call in if you have an awe-inspiring experience from your life to share with us, or a question about why we have the sensation, how to get there. Call 800-642-1234. Dacher, I think I could have predicted, you know, oh, nature, of course, music. Yeah, I feel that. The one that surprised me, I wouldn't have thought of, and it sounds like it's one of the most common ones, is moral beauty, seeing someone else do something good. And I was hoping you could expand on that.
Yeah, that caught us by surprise too. You know, I was expecting, you know, nature, spirituality to be kind of the core sources of awe around the world. But in fact, it's this interesting category called moral beauty where you see somebody be really kind. You know, they share their last few dollars with an unhoused individual. You see courageous acts. You know, we had act stories from the battlefield of soldiers and the like. You see people overcoming obstacles. I remember this mom from Ireland writing about her daughter who was born with club feet. And there she was 12 years later watching her dance on stage and just crying and goosebumps and overcome with awe. And I think what that tells us, Rob, is we are wired to be moved to the better angels of our nature, to be good by the goodness of others. It's just this deep instinct, if you will, to tear up, to be moved, to want to do better when we observe others' moral beauty. So what a lesson for us, you know, in this time when we spend too much time looking at Instagram and comparing our vacation to the fancy retreat vacation of somebody else, to, you know, remember how much goodness there is out there.
And that's one of the most inspiring parts of the book, I thought, because, you know, I'm never going to do a painting that's going to cause awe. I'm a musician. Yeah. I'm not that good. But so note that my music isn't going to create awe. But if we want to find ways to inspire awe in other people, we do good stuff in front of them.
Yeah. And, you know, this is deep, right? The humans, when we observe other people share and speak on behalf of the people who are left out or downtrodden or act in a courageous way, we tear up, it activates our physiology, it activates regions of the brain that want us to lead us to imitate those actions, right? So in some sense, these are very contagious tendencies of other people's moral goodness spreading through communities. And then you start to answer one of the questions you raise, which is why awe? Because it spreads through communities' actions that make us strong together.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in Eau Claire. Steve, hi.
Hi. You know, I'm quite old. Decades ago, I realized that, you know, when you smoke some pot, you feel a general sense of awe. But then I wonder if that limits your ability to feel awe if you're not using drugs. I mean, this has been decades since I smoked pot, but I remember the sensation that, oh my God, this is awesome. But then if you're not smoking pot, it takes, you know, a lot of time for that reservoir of the ability to feel awe to build back up again.
Interesting, Steve. Decker, a double-edged sword if we're seeking that feeling of awe in a substance.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, I tell you where this is really active in terms of people thinking about awes in psychedelics, you know, the indigenous plant medicines, the synthesized LSD and the like, and awe is elicited by these substances. It in part accounts for their benefits. And for a lot of people, that's good news, right? If you're working with trauma or the like. But I always, you know, I think one of the lessons of the book is there are 8 pathways to awe, right? Be it nature, looking at a storm on a Wisconsin, you know, prairie, or, you know, watching virtue on the football field or the like. And let's not forget, you know, that how rich the opportunities for awe are alongside those who are interested in the effects of different kinds of drugs.
Steve, thanks for that call. We're talking to psychology professor Decker Keltner about his new book. It's called Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. We'll get into some of that transformation coming up, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a question about this sensation, this emotion we call awe? Do you have a moment to share in your life that you think back on? And yeah, that inspired awe, or is there something you go to? Maybe it's nature or a piece of music or art, or you fill in the blank at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Decker Keltner, psychology professor at the University of California, Berkeley. His new book is Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about awe and wonder, or maybe your own experiences, 800-642-1234. We'll go back to your calls now. Brad is with us in Glendale. Hi, Brad.
Hi, yes. Last week, my wife and I were in Rome for a few days, and I'd been there many years before, but we went to the Colosseum. And I said I'd been there before, but I was awestruck. And my wife was. It was like, this is incredible. The engineering that's involved, it was like, wow, this incredible building. And then we were also struck by the fact that this incredible, awesome building was constructed so that people could enjoy human beings and animals kill each other.
Brad, thanks a lot for that call. And Decker, this overlap or neighborhood anyway between awe and horror is not uncommon, you write.
Not at all. I mean, you know, we took a lot of care to differentiate awe from other closely related states like beauty, which it's different from, you know, and horror. And, you know, the horror is about destruction and death. and awe is really about mystery and vastness, and they really can be pulled apart. And, you know, one of the really interesting veins of thinking is that we rely on spectacle in more brutal times in human history, like the, you know, the gladiator times where it was horrifying and people could take that in. And now we rely on, you know, artistic forms of horror, be it horror films or the like, just to kind of contemplate on these, about these, the death and perils of human existence and how it initiates our sense of wonder about why it happens. So, you know, humans have always been contemplating horror in these kinds of places and hopefully stirring our better capacities for wonder.
Thanks a lot for sharing that experience, Brad, at 800-642-1234. Dacher, I want to get into the benefits of experiencing awe. We get something out of it, apparently.
Oh, man. You know, this is why, in part, why I wrote the book, you know, Rob, because, you know, I've taught human happiness to tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people online and in classes and so forth. And it always boils down to a question, you know, of all this stuff in the new happiness literature, what can I do to better my life? And now, you know, I say, go find some awe. You know, awe makes you feel less stress, less physical pain. Veterans feel less trauma after a day of rafting for awe, as do under-resourced teenagers. You feel like you have more time. Your heart is functioning better. Your immune system has a better profile, and so on. So, you know, 5 minutes of awe is about as good for you as I think anything you can do, and important for us to remember.
Let's go back to our callers. Elizabeth is with us in Madison. Elizabeth, hi.
Hello. I actually have just I thought of a third example. The most awe moment of my life was 25 years ago when I gave birth to my child, my daughter. That definitely was awe. The variety, I'm always in awe when I look at the variety of different animals and insects and birds. It's just amazing to me. And then the last thing is I'm in awe of our body systems and what's involved in the parts of the ear, the eye, our, you know, the lungs, everything. It's just amazing to me. So,
Elizabeth, thanks so much. Elizabeth Dacher giving us, I think, a roadmap for a lot of the rest of our conversation here. First of all, the birth of her child. This is a common source of wonder and awe, it sounds like.
It is. And, you know, and I suspect Elizabeth is kind of an awe seeker with all
sounds
of those
like.
Examples. you know, around the world, people are awestruck by the emergence of a child, you know, 7 pounds coming out of the womb. Suddenly you have a life there. And what's really interesting in stories in China and Russia and Japan and the United States and Mexico and elsewhere is it really has this similar quality to it where people are awestruck by the birth of a child and they want to serve, they want to be better, they want to feel responsible, they want to take care of things. And that's a common property of awe across the eight wonders. And we need more of it, right? We need to activate these, what William James called the saintly tendencies of humans to care. And it certainly comes full on in the birth of a child.
And she also mentioned a couple of things. She mentioned the variety of animals together and the interconnected parts of the human body. And that takes me to actually a quote I wanted to throw at you here that I think is, well, anyway, I'll read it. Our default mind blinds us to this fundamental truth that our social, natural, physical, and cultural worlds are made up of interlocking systems. Experiences of awe open our minds to this big idea. This is from your conclusion. I hope it's not a spoiler. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of thinking about thinking that, you know, one form of thought is rational and reductionistic and analytical. It breaks things into its parts. And another kind of thinking is systems thinking. It sees the whole picture. It sees how different processes are working together. You look at an ecosystem, you know, the Arboretum in Madison, and you see all these systems working together of animals and flora and fauna. And awe opens us up to the big systems of life time and time again, be it you can have an experience in nature, right? You see a storm roll over the Wisconsin and you're like, wow, that was, and suddenly you see how you're part of a social system. I'm part of a community. And then Elizabeth's example is really on point as you sort of discern, Rob, which is she's awestruck by all the systems of the body, the auditory system, the visual system, the heart, you know, and they are incredible. And awe does this vital work of opening the mind to the awareness of all the systems around us. Music is a system, right? It's all these notes creating sound and meaning. And when we feel awe, we pick up those themes in music.
Talking to Dacher Kaltner, his new book is called Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. We had a call from Marissa who couldn't stay on the line, who says, I practice mindfulness and can get myself to have an awe-type feeling on my own. Did anyone in your studies demonstrate that as well?
Yeah, you know, it's that wonder of spirituality and contemplation, you know, and people find awe in ritual, in the church, in thinking about sacred texts, which is a form of contemplation or mindfulness, very rich in the indigenous traditions. I learned from Dr. Urias Seligman, who I interview in the book, an indigenous scholar, and in meditation and yoga. Yoga has a great tradition, thousands of years old, practiced by tens of millions, of kundalini, of like this awesome energy that you create with yoga. So a lot of the contemplative or mindful traditions, one of the things they're after is to give us a chance to feel awe and for good benefit.
One feeling of awe I remember, I was on the shores of Lake Superior at night, moonless night, great sky. I just read about ancient Incans like using the Milky Way as part of their astronomy and calendars and stuff. And I look up and there's the Milky Way. And this sense like they were looking at thousands of years ago and people a thousand years from now will be looking up at that. That connection with something bigger than ourselves, maybe more permanent than ourselves. Is that part of awe?
You know, if the reader were to take one idea from this book, it's to connect to things that are bigger, as you said, Rob, than yourself. We are in a self-focused time, you know, in this culture, to a lot of detriment, or it causes a lot of problems, self-focus. Awe makes us open to things that are bigger than ourselves, right? The galaxy, an ecosystem, a group of fans. Oh, they're the Packer fans. I'm part of that group. A musical piece. And I think, you know, part of our hunger right now in our culture is for that, is to reawaken our thinking about what are the big things that I want to connect to in life. They're all different for every individual. And awe points us in the direction.
I got to say, my assumption coming in, Dacher, is awe, yeah, that's lovely, but it's going to find us when it finds us. Clearly, reading your book, you make the case that no, we can go out and find it. Can you give us some like practical steps? How can we go cultivate some awe maybe tonight?
Yeah, you know, first, just allow yourself some time. Just don't label things. Open your mind. Ask questions and go on walks to places that might surprise you or be a little mysterious and different. Tell awe stories. One of my favorites is, you know, with whomever you're with, just ask what their first childhood experience of awe was and see what it tells about them. Look out at clouds in the sky and the light, right? Look, or storms passing over in Wisconsin or the snow. Pick a piece of music. I love this, where I ask people whom I teach, like, what's a piece of music that really brought tears to you and why? And share that with some other people or listen to it yourself. So many, you know, and of course, meditation and spiritual practice. So many ways to get there for this invaluable, essential emotion.
Then I want to bring things home. You use science to study awe. You also talk about how the emotion of awe has inspired scientists over the years. We think of science, oh, it's this rational, reasonable step-by-step thing. You say emotions and awe in particular are vital to science.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, not only science, but a lot of the great thinking in the world begins with an awe-inspiring epiphany. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, you know, thought about society and the Industrial Revolution, was like, oh my God, it's a disaster, and advocated for something else. Scientists are always moved by awe, or many, very often. Newton and Descartes, their minds were blown by rainbows, and they did a lot of math and color theory to figure out how it is that light bends through water and creates color spectrums. And then Darwin, you know, his thinking about evolution began in many ways, and just being awestruck by, you know, the Amazonian forest and what he called tangled banks of flora and fauna by a river. So awe is often the beginning of our best thinking.
Dacher, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for the great questions, Rob, and great to be part of Wisconsin once again.
Wonderful. That's Dacher Keltner, professor of psychology at the University of California, Berkeley, director of the Greater Good Science Center. He joined us to talk about his latest book. It's called Awe, The New Science of Everyday Wonder and How It Can Transform Your Life. We mentioned sharing a story of awe or a song that inspires awe in you or whatever. Still time for you to do that. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us, ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org with your story of a moment of awe in your own life. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Governor Evers wants more public school funding. Republican lawmakers want more voucher school funding. We'll look at education in this year's state budget decision-making process. And it's a great time to be a short person. That's according to a writer who says, despite the downsides, the modern world is more and more friendly to people who are under the average height. That and more coming up tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll hear from a doctor who's studying firearm violence to talk about what that violence looks like today, some trends, some disparities, and things that cause gun fatalities. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.